Silver Officer. I'm back up 17-18, and I don't buy the poor mom attitude that they can't afford the elastic work. So unless something comes along, and I know it can't be done, the union's having their hiring halls been challenged in court, so they bona fide domiciled in Alaska resident for a certain period of time prior to hiring, and he gets a good shot at some work, I say you can on the ground.
Yeah, thank you all. Mr. Gary, Senator Jones has a question, Gary.
Go ahead.
Would it be for exploration? Something that needs to take here to find out what was there.
Who was talking about?
Well, that old entity.
Exploration.
Exploration. We find out what's there.
Say exploration.
Go ahead.
Yeah, exploration. You have contractors. I'm tired of seeing imported transient workforce in the States. They were the ones who did something else. The economy in the state of Alaska, every transient was given their walking orders and moved down here. Alaskan workers were put to work. Like next week, you'd see a hell of a boost in the economy immediately. If that's the same thing that's been going on since probably 1980 continues, what good is the new president? I think I'm speaking to the majority of the people who live in this state. They are working people in the wager. It doesn't really help it. All the money's going outside.
Here. Stop, hold it up.
Oh, no, I'm only talking about analysts. Analysts, right? That's our position. That's right.
Any other questions? Thank you, Gary. Thank you very much, Chad. We have April Crosby. She was on the list, but was marked one way or the other. Sorry about that. Back on.
My name is April Crosby. I live at 386 River Road, which is on top of Esterdome. I represent a conservative conservation position, and I'm not going to say one word about caribou. I also represent myself. I'm trained in philosophy and logic, and have been teaching logic and straight thinking at the university here, and at UCC. And you'll see both of these perspectives in my three pages of comments, which I will read in the interest of brevity and clarity. The conservation group that I represent is Arctic Audubon, Fairbanks chapter of the National Audubon Society. This year, our chapter adopted the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge as part of the National Audubon Society Adopt a Refuge program. This simply reflects the special interest of chapter members in the refuge, and it commits us to active service toward wise and benevolent stewardship of the refuge. I want to thank you all for having these hearings. I think by having the hearings, you will realize that Alaskans are very divided on how we feel about potential oil and gas development in the Arctic Refuge. The admonishments that our congressional delegation has been making that we speak with one voice to ensure the opening of ANWR is already useless, thankfully, for there are many Alaskans who are profoundly skeptical that industrial development in this critical wildlife area will benefit anyone except the oil industry and a few economic partners which have been handpicked for some reason that I'm not aware of. I am among the cautious ones. Perhaps unlike the other conservation testimonies, I am not arguing about potential lack of wildlife. I'm arguing about present lack of information. I can understand that under present economic circumstances, the state of Alaska would consider development of our natural resources, even in an area which is valuable to the state, exactly because of this pristine state. If that development could be done in accord with explicit refuge purposes and state purposes. So the debate is whether oil and gas can be extracted from ANWR in a manner which will not destroy the wildlife, will perpetuate the substance's use, and will ensure the water and air quality of the area. It should be clear to people who follow this issue that our state agency research people have serious reservations about whether this can be done. First, it is totally unclear what impacts will result on wildlife populations. We hear from the Fish and Wildlife Service in their report to Congress regarding the refuge that the impacts on the muskox population will be major, unquote, with the majors in quotes, with the possibility that the animals being removed from 71% of their year-round critical habitat, page 114. 20 pages later, they conclude that, therefore, effects of the limited development would be moderate. Would the muskox population be affected moderately or majorly? The claim is for both. Similarly, we citizens are told by the Fish and Wildlife Service that the impacts of development on the fish populations in the coastal plain area would be small. However, this conclusion has been drawn apparently totally sorry for each drill. Fish and Wildlife Report tells us that the locations and sources of water and gravel have not been identified, but that it is clear that the resources are not available in the NO2 area. How can we rest assured that the fish population will remain healthy when the whole matter of water and gravel remains unaddressed? The fact that the Fish and Wildlife Service, supposedly guardians of our wildlife populations and their habitats, calls the problem of scarce water an engineering problem, but does not address it as a tremendous wildlife problem at all as well, calls into question their mitigative measures for wildlife and their regard for wildlife conservation as a refuge priority. The lack of water is also an economic problem. Where will the water and gravel come from? If it is somehow obtained from the local area, the wildlife would be severely affected. And if it comes from some distant point or yet to be developed technology, the cost of the oil development will soar past what we are already quoted. This and other similarly hasty discussion and conclusions call into question the economics of the project. As we have all noted, the oil and gas development of Anwar is proposed as an economic lifesaver for the state. In addition to the water economics problem mentioned above, there is the fact that the whole project has been costed out of $33 a barrel for oil, and we have not seen this price for some time. The last I heard from OMB, the state was projecting $17 a barrel of oil for some time, and even that may be high. I've heard that's recently revised downwards in their projections. Why are we expected to buy into a project that is based on unrealistic cost and market projections? If there is an economic argument that benefits Alaska for this development project, it has yet to be presented. And how the state of Alaska fits in as one of the winners has yet to be made clear. We are told that we need the oil that supposedly rescued Anwar Coastal Plain for national security. This rallying cry is extremely difficult to accept when the federal administration has recently vetoed widely supported energy conservation legislation regarding household appliances, and when the administration is also attempting to remove the 55-mile-an-hour speed limit, a sound energy conservation policy. Do we need energy resources or not? The message is muddied at best and certainly not cogent enough to warrant immediate controversial development. There are other unsolved problems. We are told we could develop Anwar in environmentally clean ways, and as we have done, we are told, at Prudhoe. How this myth of the Prudhoe Bay clean record got started, I don't know. But the problems of air quality in Arctic Bays, of deteriorating water quality due to mismanagement of reserve pits and toxic drilling muds, will, I hope, be examined in the name of research for any possible Anwar development. Governor Cooper is right that we made mistakes at Prudhoe, and the question is whether we know how to correct them and whether we would correct them before we repeat them elsewhere. By the way, there's a three-page bibliography prepared by a student at the University of Alaska on fish and water issues, fish quality and water issues, studies at Prudhoe, which should have been consulted by the 1002 report, which were not, because there's numerous research articles about Prudhoe that were not part of the 1002 report. In sum, Anwar is wilderness and should remain so unless and until some totally compelling reason for treating it differently is established. The current development plan is replete with unanswered questions. And I, unlike Mayor Wally, I don't think we should decide whether or not to develop Anwar and then worry about the implications of the implementation of the process. I think the state of Alaska will regret hasty action in support of development, and I am therefore against the related resolutions in front of you. The information on wildlife is incomplete, and based on what we do have, mitigation specifications are insufficient. The concern for air and water quality is totally ignored. The economics are at best dated and therefore suspect, and yet we are all urged to speak with one voice in favor of this confused and very rushed development project. At the House Resources Committee hearing and teleconference about the land swaps proposed for the 1002 refuge area, the committee and we the people were told that the development of Anwar was a very fast-moving train, and the state of Alaska should get on. I think the image is only too ironically appropriate because I think we are watching a railroad job. If the state of Alaska does not slow the process to one which is scientifically and economically and democratically sound, we will rue the day that we jumped on. Speaking as a representative of Audubon, I am against the resolutions for philosophic and value reasons. Speaking as an individual person, I am against the resolutions because we have confused and inadequate information regarding geology, wildlife management, and oil economics for good decision-making. Thank you.
Any questions of April? Thank you very much for the pitch. We'll go back to our sheet here, and now we've got Jeff Wilson. Wilson? Am I saying that right? Well, see.
I want to thank you for the opportunity. My name is Jeff Wilson. I'm
on the local Fairbanks North Star Borough Assembly, and I'm also on the Board of Directors of the Northern Alaska Environmental Center, but I'm speaking as a citizen here, and my view of a citizen of Alaska is that looking at these resolutions, I cannot make a decision as to whether or not the benefits to Alaska are worth as to these resolutions and their ultimate implementation in Congress. And that is because the resolutions are too simplistic in nature. They don't, as we've heard from many other people, they don't speak to a number of the issues that are important to Alaska. The local hire issue, the share of the royalty oil, royalty revenues, the royalty lease share, and all those are really important issues that could make the ANWR acceptable to Alaskans, and if they're not dealt with properly, they could also make opening up ANWR not acceptable. So my problem with the resolutions is they're too simplistic in nature, and that gets me to a point that I felt I have responsibility to discuss, and that is basically that the Senate, I think, over the last 5 years has been very simplistic in dealing with a lot of issues like this. And I just got to take this time to say this because I remember back 5 years ago with Severna County. Severna County has lost the state $1 billion in revenue. We are hurting today because we eliminated Severna County. We blew $150 million in the Sitna project, even though it was self-evident 5 years ago that we could not build that project, and the Senate was gung-ho for that. If the Senate would have had their way on Sitna, we'd be one-third into it today and bankrupt. The state would be bankrupt today if the Senate's policies on Sitna would have been carried out. Now, I see these resolutions in the same context, a simplistic solution to a complex problem, and again, the Senate has not taken the time to sit for these hearings. I thank you for that. But in general, it's taken a simplistic, the authors of these resolutions have taken a simplistic approach to a complex issue. And I, for one, cannot make a decision on ANWR, and I hope that the Senate is not asking for a fire sale of ANWR oil resources that are important economic resources for the nation, for the state.
Any questions, Jeff? Senate changes every 2 years, you know, Jeff.
Leadership's been the same for the last 5 years, more or less.
Thank you. Thank you, sir. Dave Lackery. John Barnes. Welcome to our table.
My name is John Barnes. I live here in Fairbanks. Do you need my address for these things?
No.
Okay.
Got it.
All right. I'm here to encourage you not to limit your field of vision and thought while you're dealing with these issues strictly to those ideals which have at stake the making of lots of money instead of keeping your deliberations and thoughts open to other values which might be at stake in regarding management of public lands. With regard to the National Wildlife Refuge and opening up to full-scale oil and gas development, I think it would be a great mistake to do that at this time, and I urge you not to allow that to win out without fully considering all the things that come into play. The reason I do that is because that land was set aside with a strong national mandate to protect and preserve all of it, and I think that is still there. That's still operating right now. Most of the voices that we hear right now coming to bear with respect to this land have at stake greed and a lot of monetary gain as the main driving force. And although that is very attractive to our state, especially to you in the Senate making hard money decisions right now, I don't think that ought to be the main factor or criteria for you when you make your decisions, because it is a unique resource. For instance, with the Porcupine Caribou Herd, it's an international resource, we should just look at what we have to gain as Alaskans to the exclusion of all the other things. I have subscribed. for many years to the U.S. Geological Survey's Minerals Management Service publications, and I read the technical reports that they publish, and I'm quite surprised to see the Department of Interior come out advocating development of oil and gas exploration and development at this time when the individual technical reports that they've been sending me through the mail all show that that would have a very harsh impact on the resources that we set aside in that land up there. And so I guess what I'm saying is there's a lot more resource, there are many more resources up there that have been preserved than just oil and gas. We need to keep that in mind while we're thinking about land management policies. That's all I have. Thank you.
Dave, I appreciate your comments. I wanted to just make one comment, but we're trying to extrapolate all of the information. We're trying to formulate some kind of a recommendation. We're not going to make policy. And we're trying to see whether we can get the state back to the table and become a part of a process to advise, because the consent is not advice and consent. They're going to do it to us whether we like it or not. We're just trying to soften that position as much as possible. I think that the last four or five comments that we've heard, what we're trying to do is trying to fill that gap of giving the public a chance to come forth with their ideas. We certainly appreciate you taking the time to come to us. Thank you. Thank you very much. Well, we're down to the best for the last, and that's Rudy Becker. Rudy?
Rudy Becker, I resent very much for someone to say with the current economic status in which we are now finding ourselves, that people are referring to this question primarily in regard to greed. We have hungry children in this district. We have people who have made major investments in their homes, their automobiles. They're leaving and going down the highway daily. If you don't believe it, go down and post the checks. I'm not for the oil swap. I believe we must give up all of our oil, all of our domestic oil, as soon as possible. One of the primary reasons is that worldwide development of oil in China, the Southwest Pacific, many other areas have geological potential for oil, greater, greater perhaps than Prudhoe Bay, are being developed. And if we don't give up that oil now, we may not be able to develop it ever. If we don't develop the oil, and if we don't develop some of our other natural resources, we may just as well all move out of here. The number of people leaving from this area, perhaps, I know, would be much greater if some had the opportunity to leave, but they don't even have the money to leave. They are told, sell your assets. Can you tell me what you can sell in this town today in the form of real estate, automobiles, or many of the other things that people have? And they were suckered into buying homes by numbers of in the banks and in the financial community, and they now find themselves stuck. This is a major crisis, and I hope you people realize it. Something's got to be done, and very shortly. I believe in oil exploration, to answer your question. I think that the state should invest in oil exploration itself, as suggested by Bob Bettisworth. What good are the caribou if we are getting engaged in a war in the Middle East, possibly in a nuclear war? The caribou will be gone. Let's develop our own oil so that we don't have to depend upon those people from the OPEC nations. We took them off the backs of camels and put them into tanks and aircraft so they can fight. They've been doing that for 2,000 years. The hell with them. Let's develop our own oil. We're in an economic crisis, like that. We pay $30 billion a year to support those people over there. They fought for 2,000 years, and they're going to fight for another 2,000 years. I was here in October of 1959. I objected very strenuously to tying up the Arctic Wildlife Range because we suspected that there was oil there. A good many of us did. I started to object to it as early as 1962. We were guaranteed mineral development in there. You see what has happened? Jeff talked about a simplistic or a simple solution or a simple consideration of the issue. It's very simple, or was very simple, that we could have development in that area, and look what's happened to it now. There are many other things I can say, you've heard it all. The hell with the caribou, let's save the people of the world.
Any question? Right. Anyone else that would like to say a word? If not, thank you very much for enduring this 2 days hearing. If any of your friends or associates wish to submit written comments, why we're open for written comment in the record for the month of March, Friday morning at 9 o'clock at the Luzite Lawn Library in Anchorage. Why we will be opening up another 2-day hearing on the same subject. With that, why the subcommittee's adjourned.
Certainly, give us a couple of days off before we start again.